Edward Rushton was the radical, campaigning, blind poet of Liverpool. His life spanned the 18th and 19th centuries at the time of the slave trade, of revolution, and of social upheaval. Forgotten Hero, written by Bill Hunter and narrated by George Sefton, is his story.
Chapter 2, The Intrepid Spirit. On returning to Liverpool, Rushton found that his father had married again. He and one of his sisters did not get on with their stepmother. He considered his stepmother was ill-treating his sister and had an argument with his father, who banished him from the house, although he gave him a small allowance. A sermon by T.W.M. Lund in 1887 spells out what happened next.
A time of fierce trial awaited the intrepid spirit. For 7 years, in a room generously afforded him by a poor aunt, he lived on 4 shillings a week, out of which he paid a lad 3 pence a day to read to him. In the course of this uphill study, he made himself a master of some of the finest fields of English literature, and became a writer of no mean power, advocating in poems and essays the cause of freedom in a variety of aspects.
Milton was among the writers that he studied. Milton's advanced political views made a strong impression on him, says the short sketch of his life published by the Institute of the Blind, and it goes on, "For under a gentle exterior, Edward Rushton was a revolutionary, with a burning passion for social justice." Other Liverpool anti-slavery radicals, such as Roscoe and Rathbone, are better known than Rushton. However, Rushton was far, far in advance of these, both in his stubbornness in struggle, his consistency, and his passion against injustice. His life was an extraordinary expression of an indomitable spirit in struggle for change. Rushton's history has been so well covered over that even a conscientious historian and researcher like Peter Fryer found no reference to this abolitionist when he wrote his authoritative book, Staying Power, A History of Black People in Britain. Kugwano was one of a number of African former slaves whose activities in Britain Fryer uncovered. Kugwano campaigned against slavery and was part of the movements of British workers at the end of the 18th century and went further than mere denunciation of slavery, the slave trade, and their defenders. He declared, and he was the first writer in English to do so, that enslaved blacks had not only the moral right but the moral duty to resist. The blind Liverpool poet, however, at that time, was also upholding the moral duty of the enslaved blacks to resist. Thus, he unequivocally supported Toussaint Louverture and the slave revolt he led in San Domingo, now the Dominican Republic and Haiti. His difference with Rathbone and Roscoe was his intransigent unity of word and deed. Rushton also held that, as Kugwano writes, "Every man in Great Britain was responsible in some degree for the slavery and oppression of Africans, unless he speedily riseth up in abhorrence of it in his own judgment, and to avert evil, declare himself against it." Rushton's letter to President George Washington in 1796 showed his clarity on the fight against oppression. He wrote as a wholehearted supporter of American independence. However, in a striking and bitterly ironic letter that his friend, the Reverend Shepherd, described as more strong than courteous, more convincing than conciliatory, he described the minority of Americans who were slaveholders.
"The hypocritical bawd who preaches chastity, yet lives by the violation of it, is not more truly disgusting than one of your slaveholding gentry bellowing in favor of democracy. In defending your own liberties, you undoubtedly suffered much. Yet if your Negroes, emulating the spirited example of their masters, were to throw off the galling yoke, and, retiring peaceably to some uninhabited part of the western region, were to resolve on liberty or death, what would be the conduct of the southern planters on such an occasion? Nay, what would be your conduct? Would you have the virtue to applaud so just and animating a movement as a revolt of your southern Negroes? No. I fear both you and your countrymen would rather imitate the cold-blooded British cabinet, and, to gratify your own sordid views, would scatter, among an unoffending people, terror, desolation, and death. Harsh as this conclusion may appear, yet it is warranted by your present practice. For the man who can boast of his own rights, yet hold 200 or 300 of his fellow beings in slavery, would not hesitate, in case of a revolt, to employ the most sanguinary means in his power, rather than forgo that which the truly republican laws of his country are pleased to call his property. Shame! Shame! That man should be deemed the property of man, or that the name of Washington should be found among the list of such proprietors.
Rushton's poem called American Independency ends with the following verse.
How can you, who have felt the oppressor's hard hand, who for freedom all perils would brave, how can you enjoy peace while one foot of your land is disgraced by the toil of a slave? Oh, rouse then, in spite of a merciless few, and pronounce this immortal decree. Whate'er be man's tenets, his fortune, his hue, he is man, and shall therefore be free.